Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1.
Okay, I'm joined now by one of Cork's finest showmen. He's an electrician turned comedian from Knocknaheeny who is selling out venues around the country with his stand-up show offline. Chris Kent, you're very welcome to the studio.
Hey, how's it going, Dermot? Good to see you.
And you, my friend. You keep popping up on my Instagram feed.
I know, I'm all over it, aren't I?
But isn't social media, obviously gets a lot of negativity. A lot of it isn't good. But I think for performers, those little clips that particularly stand-up comics can throw up, I think they really work, don't they?
A game changer. It has been just life-changing for me. Honestly, I went from doing a touring comic, modest enough tours with no TV breaks, to doing a massive tour just from social media clicking. And then now an even bigger tour now with the offline show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's mad.
And because a lot of the stuff that comedians put up as well are the moments of crowd work.
Just the improv. Yeah. You don't have to worry about burning the material. I also put up lots of stuff from previous shows. But whatever crowd work works on the night, I also throw that up.
Yeah. I was watching one last night, actually. It popped up very funny. You're like, is anybody in? Not from Ireland? Silence.
Yes.
And then you just randomly go to one guy. Hey, where are you from? He goes, New Zealand.
Of course. Yeah. I was very impressed with myself because he met his wife in Australia, and I guessed where they met.
Yeah.
I guessed that just a random is an Irish pub, and then I named the Irish pub, and of course the crowd went mental, and I was like, yes, very chuffed.
Brilliant. Talk to us about offline. You literally did that for a couple of months.
Did it for 2.5 months. Yeah,
you left the internet.
Completely left it at the end of the last tour. Like the internet gave me the break for the back at a tour, which I toured like before this one, and as a consequence, I was on it way more than I even would be. So I was just constantly on my phone. So I challenged myself.
You're your own marketeer, aren't you?
You're your own marketeer, but you have to know, you have to have a bit of balance. And I've always been curious if I'd be able to survive without my phone, being someone that turned into a person that sat and had my way home every single night and really was stopping to think for myself altogether, really, asking my phone, what will I eat? How will I get home? I mean, I should know these things, you know what I mean? So it was a bit of a challenge. I always wondered, because I was finding it increasingly harder to write as well, you know, really was. So I said, if I didn't have this, would it really make a difference?
Oh, would you get that?
That was the real motivation.
The writing flow without the constant distraction.
Exactly. Would I be able to sit down for a long time and write? So and
did you get amazing. Yourself like a burner phone? Like
I had a burner. I had a little Nokia phone, a little 3310. That's all I had for like 8.5 weeks. I didn't log on to any devices, didn't do anything at all. Just wrote this show, made a little documentary myself about it. Did all these gigs that you normally wouldn't do. I did a gig in a care home in Cork, talking to the residents about themselves and technology and the gap or whether they enjoyed the technology. And I did these kind of random gigs around the country. I did one in Mayo. I was just kind of giving little challenges. Here's a gig. It's in Mayo. It's in a pub in Mayo. That's all we're giving you. You don't have your sat-nav. You can't book a hotel. So
yeah, okay. So the first thing, I think most people are horrified by the idea of just being offline for two months. But I think the one thing, certainly for me, Google Maps.
That has literally changed the world. Biggest Achilles heel when it came to it. I got lost so often. It was frightening how much I got lost.
Did you use paper maps?
Yes. And I was really good. I got really good at reading them. Even like the sort of however many inches to the mile, you know what I mean? I was able to work all that out.
Yeah.
And I was very chuffed with that. But every now and again, the paper maps will let you down. I did a gig in Belfast the night before I went to Edinburgh for my fringe run. I did one final gig in Belfast, and it was in a new venue because I drive over all the time to Edinburgh from Belfast for the month of August. And I got lost on the way to this gig in Belfast.
Belfast, with Google Maps.
It is hard,
It just wants you to take a wrong turn and send you out on some ring road.
I had a plan in my head. I had a plan perfectly, but all it takes is a bus to pass one sign that you're trying to read. And then I got lost. And I got lost in a part of Belfast where I was not comfortable asking for directions with my accent. Judging by the colours of the curbstones and everything else, I was like, I think I might just try and get to the gig some other way. But I just made the gig and it was really stressful. And I was, you know what I mean? I was like on stage 5 minutes later. One of the guy's wives afterwards said, listen, I'm actually driving past your hotel. Just follow me in my car. You know what I mean? Take the stress out. You're up early in the morning to go to Edinburgh. So I go, amazing, thank you so much. She said, look, I'm driving to Suzuki. I jump into my car, I pull around the corner, two identical Suzukis pull out the same time and start driving away, and I'm like, what am I going to do? Who am I going to follow? So I'm like trying to ring her husband on my burner phone to say, what colour Suzuki does your wife have? I don't know what Suzuki to follow.
It sounds like a moment from a bank heist movie where they put out a decoy car.
I got there in the end, but yeah, that was my experience with maps. I constantly got lost. I was over in Liverpool another time, constantly getting lost.
And were you okay with getting lost? Because again, that's something that we did quite a lot in, you know, 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And you just had to be okay with it. Did you lost your temper or got frustrated?
I got used to it. It was frustrating when I nearly missed gigs and I was starting to question what I was doing with this whole thing, you know. I would also, when I asked for directions initially, I was like, oh, if I buy a bit of food, I'll feel a bit more comfortable. So I'd go into I went into a pizza place in Liverpool and bought a slice of pizza and was like, oh, by the way, do you know how to get to this place? And then couldn't understand her accent because she was, and I couldn't pull her up on it because we were in Liverpool. So I ended up getting even more lost, but just with pizza, you know. So yeah.
And what about booking accommodation? That's something else we take for granted. You just jump onto one of the apps and you just hit and off you go.
There's nothing.
Because you also you need to find their phone number to ring them up.
You can. Yeah, that's what I learned. So that was one of the things with the gig in Mayo. They said, where are you going to stay? And I was like, I genuinely had not thought of that at all. I was like, oh no, where am I going to stay? I then went, oh, 11811. Remember 11811? I was I typed that into my phone and nothing happened because obviously 11811 doesn't work anymore. So I had a number for my agent and then she had a number for the venue and I rang her, and my last ditch kind of plan was I either drive up there, it's going to take me so long to get there, if I can even find a place. So my last ditch plan was I'll buy a tent. I bought a tent in Halfords.
That's desperation.
Yeah, I know. Well, my support act and cameraman were thrilled about that as well. So I said, can we camp outside your pub? And they were like, yeah, you can camp outside the venue. It was so much fun. I found the gig. We had the most amazing day getting there without maps, reading paper maps, and it was just incredible.
And did you end up camping?
Yeah, we camped there. Yeah. I just camped. I didn't want to cheat at all. I didn't want to use the internet.
Well, could you walk up to the front driveway of a B&B?
That did cross my mind. I can walk up to the front driveway of a B&B, but I wasn't sure what time I would get there at. And then there was the, you know what I mean? I was going, I'm not sure if I want to be looking for accommodation. So it was either pitch a tent, ask somebody during the gig, where will I stay tonight? But I said a tent would be safer for some reason. And it took us an embarrassing amount of time to put the tent up because I panicked. You just go, usually I YouTube it, and I just panicked and I thought, I'm doing it wrong. And people were coming to the gig. People were turning up and I was putting a tent up there outside the pub. And eventually the gig was starting and I had to go in, and big Mayo men came out and helped me put up my tent, which was lovely of them, you know.
I bet you if you had a few cans and you had a festival, you'd probably do it in about 30
seconds. I know. But these things get in your way. Like you go, oh, I'm panicking. Even if I had a YouTube tutorial, I probably wouldn't have panicked so much. But it just got into my head and I couldn't remember how to put a tent up.
Apparently 11811 does work and you still can use it.
Really?
Yeah, so maybe you were doing one of the old ones.
It did not work for me. It didn't. Maybe. It did not go through for me. I tried ringing it. 11811. Are you serious?
Yeah, I must try that. That's what we're hearing. Yeah, I suspect that message is very much from the people of 11811.
Oh, could be. Well,
hey, we're still here. Somebody's there talking about us.
I got a good story anyway from tenting and
you did.
But I tried it. Yeah, I tried ringing it. My support acting cameraman would not be happy to find out that 11811 worked all
along. Well, maybe it was the burner phone, just couldn't connect with
maybe
it.
Maybe that's
reason.
What it was. Maybe you never know. Yeah,
That's exciting. So when you did go back and you reconnected, how did you feel?
I didn't want it back. I did not want my phone back. I'd become so used to it and so used to even finding my way around. I didn't want it back. It was so good for my head, so good for my anxiety, so good for my creativity.
You missed playing a bit of Snake.
I was brilliant at Snake. I was so good at it. I also kind of, I'd set myself this mad challenge change. When I handed over my phone for that period, I handed it over at the end of my last tour and I announced a brand new show. I'm doing a brand new show in 8.5 weeks. And I'd set myself this massive challenge where I only had really 20 minutes. I said, I'm going to be doing a brand new show. And that show that I did do, I didn't advertise it online. I didn't sell it online. It was totally on internet, tickets on the door. So there was all loads of little things going on at the same time, you know.
So you were far more productive.
Way more productive. I couldn't get over it. Even just reading books. I normally listen to books. I read a couple of books. I wrote so much. Yeah. Any dead space I had, I was writing and working on the show.
And you said less anxiety as well.
Way less anxiety, genuinely. I was actually surprised at how much the phone must be affecting me. You know?
Yeah, that's really... I mean, we kind of know this.
Of course, we know this intellectually.
Mm. Everybody knows.
Yeah, you don't just get to look. Let me look at the worst stories in the world here before I close my eyes and go to sleep. Yeah. It's going to have an effect on you, probably.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I think if we could do a collective, it's the feeling of being the person without it, because you're out of the loop. Mm. So I think if we could collectively organize everyone in the country to stand along the coastline.
Yes.
And one, two, three, yeah! And throw our phones into the sea.
Because it is pretty impossible to survive without it, is what I did learn. My wife took over everything for me. That's why I was able to do it. She took my smartphone.
Oh, there you go. She locked me out of it.
I accidentally called her my Wi-Fi in Edinburgh. So she was doing everything.
I love you, Wi-Fi.
It was crazy, but I got it back. I didn't want it back. And then old habits die hard. After a while, I felt like all my habits are just the same now. Mm. I feel like someone that went off something for Lent and now I'm back on it.
Yeah, that's it. Well, at least you've touched it. You've seen Narnia.
You can
meet Mr. Tumnus through the wardrobe if you really want to again.
And the best thing I will say that I've gotten since is the brick. I've got this brick device on my fridge now. You tap the brick and it takes off all the distracting apps off your phone. It's brilliant.
So you tap it in the morning and you can't get distracted until you go back and tap it again.
And sometimes I'll tap it when I'm leaving the house. If I want to bring my phone with me, if I'm going for a coffee with my family, I'll tap the brick and that takes all the distracting apps off.
Isn't it kind of sad that that's where we are as humans?
It is sad.
It's kind of like I have to lock the hammer in the cupboard to stop myself hitting myself on the head.
It's really sad, but unfortunately... Yeah. This is definitely the best thing that works for me, where I can still bring my smartphone around with me and not completely lose it, you know?
What I love about what you're doing, I love your success at the moment. I can see it. I'm so happy for you and so many other stand-up comics at the moment.
Thank you very much. Just really flying.
But I know, especially because I know you went back to work. You went back to work as an electrician during COVID because... Mm-hmm. You were feeling the squeeze. Performers were getting nothing during that time. And I guess you've had a lot of moments in your life, I would guess, where you're having that conversation, that little civil war in your head, or should I do the sensible thing, or should I keep pursuing this dream? How are you feeling in your head these days?
I'm very happy with my decision now, but I was also very happy with my decision then. There was no question at all. I wasn't too proud at all to pick up my tools again and... Yeah. You know what I mean? Blow off the 12 years of dust or whatever had gathered on them. I was nervous about
it. Which wire am I not meant to touch again?
Exactly. No, that's the thing. I was nervous about it. Yeah. Unbelievably nervous, I would say. But also, I was far more nervous about not making money and not being able... We moved back from England after COVID. I was living in my childhood bedroom with my wife and kids, you know? I was fully aware at that point. It didn't feel like gigs were even coming back. So it wasn't... Mm-hmm. The nerves of going back to work were far outweighed by, what if I never get out of my childhood bedroom with my wife and kids? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I went back and a couple of weeks into it, honestly, I was like, I'm actually good at this. It's a completely different brain, like, you know. I loved it, absolutely loved it. But eventually the time did come when the gigs came back and...
Mm. What were the other electricians like with you, knowing that you're a comic? Were they like, tell us a joke?
Yeah, there was a tiny bit of that, but just a tiny bit. People... just want electricians to be electricians, I find. No one wants a funny electrician. No one wants like, this guy's hilarious. Yeah, but we had to move out because our house burned down, you know. No, people just want you to be an electrician. They're different hats, you know. I'd have a laugh with them in the canteen and I'd have a laugh with them elsewhere. But when it came to doing my work, I would be fairly serious about it.
Yeah, yeah. And good. Yeah. You mentioned the kids.
Yes, right.
Presumably you get material. So your wife, Niamh, of course, who became Wi-Fi for a while. She's a proud Tipperary woman. You also have a six-year-old and a nine-year-old. What are their names?
Evelyn is my little girl. She's six and Jack is nine. Okay. They're amazing. They're so good.
Now, we all know the only reason comedians have children is for to material, mine them for material.
So much material. Yeah. So much material.
What have you learned from them?
So much. Just being a dad changes everything, doesn't it? Yeah. I can't remember not being a dad, really. I find it very hard to remember life without kids. They're amazing. My daughter is incredibly funny, does not think I'm funny at all, tells people I'm not funny on a daily basis.
Nice.
Just tell people my dad's a comedian and I don't think he's funny. I don't get it. And I'm like, yeah, I understand. She was five at the time. I was like, you're five. You're not my target demographic. You like My Little Pony. I'm glad you don't find me funny, actually. So, but her school secretary stopped me on the way out of the school last year. And she said, Evelyn was telling us there that you're a comedian. And she knows I'm a comedian anyway. And she said she doesn't think you're funny. And I'm like, yeah, good. You know, good. And that night at the dinner table, I was telling my wife this story. I was like, you know, the secretary stopped me today on the school run and said, Evelyn doesn't think I'm funny. And I was laughing at it. And Niamh then said to Evelyn, who was at the table with us, listen, look, your daddy has lots to do. He mightn't be funny to you, but he's got to do the school run, the lunches, all the other jobs around the place that need to be done. And, you know, but when he goes on stage and does his job, he is funny. And my daughter looked straight at my wife and said, that's what you think. So I got cut down.
I've read the reviews, honey.
She's got cut down by my five-year-old at the time daughter. And I think it's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, you need that perspective.
Yeah, that's and my son is amazing as well. He's just, he's very funny. He's more introverted. He's probably closer to what I was when I was a kid. He's really clever. He loves school, loves music, plays the piano. Yeah, he's brilliant.
I would always see you as a bit of an introvert.
I am an introvert, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
How do you explain the desire to jump up on a stage then?
I was always watching, you know. I was introverted, but I was watching people in class that were funny and I would go home with them jokes and I'd sit up on the counter and tell my mum and dad the jokes that I heard people tell in school. And
that's rabbing material.
Yeah. I don't think it was their original material either, to be fair. To be absolutely fair, I don't think I wasn't at a show of theirs. But yeah, and then I always, like, I found my mum and dad and my family hilarious all the time. But I was always drinking it in. And I liked then that evolved to me retelling other people about my parents or about a teacher, about something else.
Yeah.
Which would have been original. And
it's so funny when we're kids and it's, you hear it so much from comics in particular, that you sit there and you study your parents almost like they're kind of zoo animals or something. And you're sitting at the kitchen table, look at the way they eat, look at what he's doing with his mouth. I remember my first impression ever was of my dad eating chocolate.
He used to
sniff. Like, it was a big ceremony. It was a big ritual to my dad, eating very, very gone off chocolate from a box of Black Magic, you know, and it would take about 20 minutes of this performance. But I think we study our parents.
We definitely do.
I remember,
me and my brother would watch my dad eat like potatoes. He'd put a boiling hot potato in his mouth and we'd be like, but then just do it again immediately. Like, he has not learned his lesson at all.
Are you learning anything from turning 40? I know you've been weaving that into your material.
I've been talking
as well.
About it on stage. I've been accepting that you don't get to see your friends that often. And I try to make the effort now when it does arise, you know. Sometimes you just have to drop plans. When your friend texts you and says they're nearby, you go, yeah, okay, cool, I'll be over to you, because I may not see you again ever, or for a year or whatever. And when we do meet up, it's like our friends we're all in our kind of 40s. I'm going grey. They will remind me of that. They love reminding me that I'm going grey, as if I don't know. I love that about when you're going grey. A lot of bald men like actually pointing it out as well. I don't know what that fascination is.
It's all they have.
But they'll go, you're getting a few grey hairs there, Chris. And I'm like, I saw that in your head, actually. So, but my friends now are, you know, we'll meet up and someone will be really ridiculed for wearing a gilet, you know. That would be, one of my friends wore a heated gilet and that was he was gone. It was basically, no one got to find out anything else about anybody else. It was just his gilet.
That would fit quite
it
neatly.
It had a battery pack, you know what I mean?
So you, sorry guys, I'll be with you in a minute. I need to charge my gilet.
Yeah, exactly, he was showing off and he got a different roasting that he was expecting that day and never wore it again. It is the middle of a jacket. Make up your mind about your temperature.
Thinking? What was he thinking wearing that out with the lads? Although I think it would fit quite neatly into the list of gentlemanly things we were talking about a little while ago. Have you any thoughts on that? What makes a gent these days?
I saw that list. I think one thing I try to do, and it's only because my wife makes me very conscious of it, is stop telling her stuff that I've done in the house. Do you know what I mean?
Waiting for your medal ceremony.
Stop. I did empty the dishwasher. I did this thing.
Hoping that it would be like the end of Star Wars where you're standing beside Chewbacca getting the medal put around your neck for housework.
I can't help myself. I can't help telling her. And she never tells me. She's like, you know that this stuff gets done all the time.
Yeah.
And
don't say you're babysitting your own kids either. I've learned the hard way on that.
I know. Yeah. I'm looking after the kids. I think the gentlemanly things, I think one of them was remembering the waiter's name, which that was on the list.
That's right, yeah.
That's creepy. I don't even remember people in my life. Sometimes I struggle with their names. And I'd be like, I know this guy 5 years. It's too late for me to ask now. I'll just keep on calling him boy, buddy, fella, until I hear someone else call him his name.
I love that your stuff is Irish, but it's also very relatable for anybody. Mm. Do you find that your stuff really has really worked in the likes of London where you lived and Australia and these places?
Absolutely, yeah, it has. I don't know if that was a conscious thing that I did, but I try not to have, I don't want to lean on anything Irish or anything, you know, that's like a reference that other people might not get. The closest I've gotten to it so far is there's a bit on my new show about the Lollipop Children. I don't know if you know about that. Like when I went to school, my daughter was asking me, did you have a lollipop man or a woman that helped you cross the road? And I was like, oh my God, no, we had lollipop children. Like the children did the job. And then it seemed so weird to me. I was like, why did they do it? They did it. They honestly did it. I don't know if you know about this. It was all over Ireland. There's still lollipop children in some places. There was 6 of them.
If there are people listening to this right now who will question their own sanity and most importantly their age.
Yes.
When I put out there was an ad on TV years ago. I think it was in the 70s and it was, congratulations, Seamus, here is your warden certificate.
Yes, the traffic wardens. That's the government gaslighting us. They were lollipop children. They had no power at all to hand out parking tickets. They were there. They got a cup of tea every morning. I wanted to be one, by the way. I was jealous. My mother wouldn't leave me be a lollipop child. But the whole madness of it is what I absolutely loved. And sometimes when there's been one or two places I've gone to in England where they don't get that, but there's great fun in explaining it. Yeah. And I said, nobody heard lollipop children in school. That's only happened to 2 ever gigs. And always I'd catch lollipop children that were previous lollipop children in the gig. I always catch them because I'll say, oh, this is what happened. There were 6 of them. You had to allow to lose a few, blah, blah, blah. And they had these phrases to get you across the road. And I would start off the little chants that they had to do, you know?
Yeah. So which were?
The lollipop children. First thing they would say is, stop the traffic. And then 2 of them would put their little signs out. And then I'd leave a small pause. Mm. And then someone in the audience will say the next bit. And I'll be like, ah, gotcha.
Oh, which was?
Take up your positions. This is in my new show now, so you are going to see this if you come. And then they all stepped onto the road like a Just Stop Oil protest, you know? Just children in front of me.
I love that. Yeah. Who will we get the children safely across the road?
What about the children?
More children!
What about children that are smaller than some of the children crossing?
Before we let you go, listeners are desperate to know this app or this device you were talking about.
The brick.
It's called The Brick.
It's called Brick, yeah. You can order online. Honestly, and this is not an ad for Brick. I got it myself. I've tried everything. I've tried, you know, the lockbox that you lock your phone into. And it's insane because somebody rings and you're answering. You're carrying a big box around with you. It's called Brick. And you can set up so many different things on it. So I have, for example, I have a family time on my Brick. And then I tap it It takes all the distracting apps off. You can just set it up where, okay, I just want my phone in case somebody rings me. So you can just leave it on as a phone and block everything else. Okay. It's called Brick. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Okay.
It was recommended to me by another comedian.
Enough advertising of that. We want to advertise your tour and your shows. Yeah. This is why you're here.
I forgot about that. I'm getting carried away.
You've got seven shows left all around the country.
Right.
Very nearly sold out. Mm. So please go and see Chris Kent. He's also got one in Vicar Street, 21st November. See if he's coming to a town near you. Details on chriskentcomedy.com.
Thank you very much, Dermot.
Up Cork, up the Rebel County. Yes. And thanks for dropping
in. Great
to
see you. Thanks so much.
You too, Chris. Mind yourself. Cheers. Take a quick break.
Email oliver@rte.ie.